cellular data to live stream audio while driving around and doing all these handoffs from tower to tower and all this stuff. Like, I get why it's shaky. But then, you know, it's also like a service. Like, I'm paying for my phone service and I'm kicking Mixlr a little bit of money too. So it's kind of like, at some point I start to wonder, you know, is there something out there that's going to be like better than this? Like, I remember abandoning Spreaker because it was a pile of shit that like would spam Twitter every time like the latent of the network stuff dropped out and came back. Like, it would repost to Twitter and it was just like 9 tweets in a row. It was all fucked up. And then there's this, what is it, this thing that I installed that we tried out the other morning. You know the one. Voice, V-O-I-S. Which seemed like it was cool, but it doesn't have a chat room, and you can only listen to it on iOS, apparently. Maybe they have a desktop one now. But that, probably not, I don't know. That might eventually be something worth checking out. I like Mixlr, though. I don't know. For as janky as it gets, like, it's got the chat room. It's easy to start and stop. It records a local archive if you want it. Or, you know, you can push those archives up to their server. But you have to do that manually, which is a hassle, and sometimes it breaks. But yeah, like, the ideal would be, if this was, like, rock-solid reliable, it'd be nice to eventually get to a point where it's like, hey, let's, like, host a call-in radio show from the car. But it's just not there, you know? And also, just straight up, you know, there are plenty of days where I have jack shit to say, and I'm tired, and I just want to listen to music, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, the idea of filling every single drive with actual programming is probably not the best idea. But regardless of that, the phone lines are open. If anyone does have a question, it's 707-925-2662. That number's on, I think it's on my Tumblr somewhere too, if you want. You can call and leave voicemails anytime, but when I flip a switch in this Google Voice app, it then will ring through to my cell phone, and then theoretically we could try to take phone calls. But yeah, I think it'd be cool to eventually get to a point where it's like, yeah, like a call-in radio show or like a, like, guest thing, you know, commute with somebody and ask them questions, a commute interview show, or, you know, you call them and do a phone interview from the car. Yeah, you know, you run into the thing where, you know, sometimes people don't want to call in. Sometimes they're afraid. Here we go. Florida. All right. Hello, Florida. Who is this? What are you doing?
Hey, it's Bob. I'm studying and putting off studying by listening to you talk in your car. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing okay. I'm in San Francisco, and it's the sun is going down, and it actually looks kind of nice for a change.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, you were talking about, like, not really being into any of the music that's on the new rock band. Do you think that's just because they're looking to attract a new audience, or is it just they don't have the licenses for the stuff that they used to, or what do you think that's about?
Well, I think it's, you know, I know that there's an art to putting together, like, your on-disc soundtrack, because you have to have, like, you know, they've done the research, I'm sure, but, you know, you have to try to appeal to enough different people that you're kind of hitting different marks, right? So it's why you end up with, like, new stuff, and then, you know, here's one Skynyrd song, and then here's Elvis, and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I don't know, like, you know, if you think about the years and years of DLC they produced for Rock Band, like, they hit most of what they needed to hit. So at some point, like, you know, what are they gonna put in? And you know, they probably put in some newer stuff. I mean, they have that Bruno Mars song on there, which is, you know, whatever, it's, you know, it's a pop song, like, why not? It's a very popular song, and they... Maybe that'll get them some attention. They're a little late on it, maybe, but... So, yeah, I don't know.
Anything to sell copies.
Yeah, what was that?
Anything to sell copies, really, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of think that, you know, and I'm sure the business doesn't work out for them to do it this way, but, like, I kind of wish that they just would put out, like, hey, go buy the instruments, and it comes with a shell. Like Dance Central Spotlight didn't come with, like, any music. It was just a shell for buying DLC. Like, that's kind of all I'm looking for out of Rock Band. Like, if you think about it, like Rock Band 4 is especially bare bones. Like, there's not a lot of additional features and stuff like that in there. The character creator is pretty reduced. Like, it's kind of like Dance Central Spotlight in that way, you know? So, like, I feel like the $60 price point for the game is, like, you know, a lot of that is probably going to that music, and none of that is music that I especially want. So I wish that there was, like, another option for, like, hey, if you buy any Rock Band instrument, it comes with a download code for Rock Band 4 with zero music, or, you know, or whatever, like DLC edition or something like that, but I'm sure...
If it's going to be, like, a shell for them going forward, maybe they need to make getting your...
It sucks. It's terrible how... like, you know, like I had to go through every single song to add my, you know, add the DLC that, you know, that had ported over. And then some of the songs that I actually owned didn't show up as purchased. So it still showed up with the price tag. So there's, like, no way for me to know... Other than remembering, like, wait a minute, I think I bought that song, and then hitting and going, wait, I totally did. Like, that's a bad, bad process. I can't believe it's like that.
And I don't know how much of that is under their control. I'm sure there's a lot they have to do with the console manufacturers dealing with all their bullshit.
Yep.
But they, still, it sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. I think they came out and said, like, hey, the APIs for these console storefronts do not support the load of content that we dump on them, so actually making those calls and figuring out who owns what and just, like, presenting a list of, like, here's everything you own is apparently not possible. So I guess, you know, on some level it's not entirely their fault, but it's like this is a, like, there needs to be a better solution for what they did, I guess. But I don't know, that thing's weird. It's Rock Band, and you can play it, and I'm sure that's plenty for 90% of the people that would be interested in that sort of thing, but, you know, it's kind of, yeah, like I said, feels a little bare bones.
Well, I hope it does well. Thanks for talking to me, man.
Yep.
Love the site.
Cool, thanks. See ya.
Have a good drive.
All right. Yeah, we got a Rock Band quick look going up on the site tomorrow. Kind of walking through. Actually, I walked through a little bit of that DLC stuff and just show how the store is. Like, you know, I already did it, so it's not a pure, hey, look at how messed up this is. But, you know, I kind of explain a little bit of that process. And you know, we play some songs. We do some guitar solos and such. now I'm on the Golden Gate Bridge. Florida just coming through hard tonight. Hello, I just pulled into a tunnel. I don't know if you can even hear me.
Hey.
Hey, hi.
So, with regards to all the Kojima stuff that's been going on, have you thought about Snatcher?
Have I found out about Snatcher? Like, what do you mean?
Thought about Snatcher in the sense that, with all the talk about no studio could pick up Kojima because any work he's done, I for some reason I started thinking about Snatcher again recently, and I mean Kojima's done lower budget things that have his sort of nut job sensibility previously, and do you think he could go back to doing things like Snatcher or Police Knots, or is that just even ignoring the genre of that, but that sort of scale?
I think so. I mean, but, if you think about, what his interests seem to be by the size and scope of his games, they were going out and, taking CQC training and going to L.A. and shooting guns and, all this location scouting and all this expensive stuff. So if his tastes are really still there, then, in that sort of thing, then that gets expensive, So, yeah, I think he's capable of making smaller games. Snatcher seems like a weird one because it's really just kind of a point-and-click adventure. And, you talk about the size and scope, but that means a different thing now to make, a game of that size and scope and the team size that would make that sort of thing. And, I don't know. I know some developers that go to large studios definitely get that feeling sometimes. Man, I wish I could just make something small that felt like it was mine. Or felt like it was a more direct representation of my vision. But, ostensibly his vision is all over that fucking thing. And then, you talk to, I remember talking to, guys like Cliff Bleszinski, asking him, hey, would you ever think about going back and making another Jazz Jackrabbit or doing some kind of small indie thing. And I remember his answer just being fuck no. I want to make huge ass games. It's fun. So I don't know that every developer is going to have the temptation to want to do it small, but yeah, in terms of just how much money could he raise to make a game, what would a publisher give him budget wise? How much time would they give him? How hands off would they be? Those are the harder questions, and I just don't know enough about him and kind of where his head would be at.
This call is now being recorded.
Cool. This call is now being recorded.
So the thing with Snatcher, though, is just thinking about it, even ignoring the budget type things, he's capable of doing his style of game and the games that feel much the sort of Kojima over-the-top, nut-job, twisty-filled thing, even with something of Snatcher scale, which is, I mean, I'm sure Snatcher was very expensive for time, but, like, just watching the intro to that game, where they all was, like, you know, on this way talking about Lucifer Alpha, you know, yeah. half the world's population died. It feels very Kojima, despite being completely divorced from everything that we've known for Kojima for, like, the last 2 decades. It's become so synonymous with only Metal Gear as of late.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that those sensibilities do kind of cross over out of Metal Gear into kind of the earlier stuff, for sure. And so, I think he would be perfectly capable of making a smaller game that still felt like it had his fingerprints on it. It's just a matter of, like, you know, would the desire be there on his part? And, you know, it's like, how much of his team would he want to keep together, and how expensive do they get, and all that sort of stuff. There are too many different variables to really say, like, how well it could work out. But I think that's entirely possible. I mean, you definitely see a lot of him on those earlier games.
Cool. Well, thanks,
yep.
man.
Yep. See ya.
Have a good night.
You too. I don't know why it came on and said this call is now being recorded. I think that's a button you can hit on Google Voice to, like, record a call that you're taking, but I didn't hit a button. Seriously, why is everyone from Florida? Tallahassee, you're on the air.
Hi, I've called before. I've been thinking about this for a while. Since all of the open world games that have come out this year, there seems to be a weird, and this kind of showed up.
Max, too. You know, it's not.
I'm not saying it's a great game. I'm saying it seems like, even if you went back a year or two, a lot of the things that they sort of called out on Mad Max weren't really called out on other similar games. It
just seems like
a year, because there's so many world games that it seems like, because there are so many good ones, I should say.
Yeah,
that
totally.
What it expected has also gone up.
Yes, definitely. That is. I mean, standards in games change. You know, as more games get released,
yep.
like, the bar is kind of constantly raised, and open world games have been.
Yep. And that is a very good thing.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, like the bar gets raised, and there have been so many open world games, and you know, you especially see with, like, Ubisoft stuff kind of following that same template across different genres, even where, you know, it's easy to see, like, you know, they're finding formulas, and in some cases they're sticking a little too close to those formulas, and I think that's,
yeah,
that's a little,
I'll be honest, boring. I haven't really, yeah, I agree. I've never been a particularly huge fan of the way Ubisoft has done open world games.
Yeah.
They always felt those all too much, too sort of boilerplate to me.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Assassin's Creed for a good while there. There was a good few years that I think they were really nailing it. And then, you know, every game around it became Assassin's Creed, and Assassin's Creed kind of fell off, and, you know, everything kind of went up in the air. But, you know, it's yeah, I don't necessarily see that as a problem. I think it's, yeah, the standards in games change as more games get released, and you know, the other. And so you didn't see a lot of crossover there, but, you know, all the games that kind of led up to Mad Max's release, I think, are the things that undercut Mad Max.
Yeah, also for the race bar, this is the year of, like, Dying Light came out late last year, and this is Witcher 3, this is GTA 5. Also, I guess sort of an interesting, a more interesting question, though, like, this seems like just more of a historical one. I'm looking at what's coming out this. The end of this year is going to be nuts, but I've also looked at it compared to sort of the 360, sort of PS3 generation, and I realized this year happened 2 years into the cycle, where the equivalent of what's happening now happened only a year into the last cycle.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. It's that's all developers being caught off guard. Everyone played it safe when the new consoles came out, because a lot of publishers weren't sure if consumers were going to want to buy new consoles in big numbers, you know? And so everyone was really hesitant with their initial kind of green lights and, you know, the stuff they were kind of putting onto those new consoles. So when the consoles came out and took off and actually started selling really well, and it was like, okay, there's actually a lot of excitement around these, everyone had to rush to start greenlighting projects and finding budget to get new games in development. And a lot of them got caught off guard. It's why, you know, it's why we didn't have this until recently. And you know, last year was a lot of, like, remakes and reissues and a lot of the quick-hit port jobs, because that was the fastest stuff they could put out to take advantage of this, like, you know, growing user base. It's unfortunate, but yeah, it took us an extra, it took developers and publishers an extra year to get there, but it's nice that we seem to be finally getting there, at least.
Yeah, I guess it sort of proves the larger point that, like, even, again, I've been hearing it the last few years, a lot of people think mobile, and I think that's largely a different audience and a different use case. I don't think mobile's ever going to really replace a dedicated games device.
You're right, it won't, but it's not about one replacing the other. It's about publishers having, you know, a certain amount of money and having to make decisions about how to spend that money.
People were going to buy the new one as quick as they did.
Yeah, right. But, you know, it becomes an opportunity cost thing. You know, they could spend, you know, $80 million making a Metal Gear Solid 5. You know, Konami's a perfect example. You know, like, they could spend that much money making MGS5 and get back a chunk of money. Or they could put out, you know, 20 mobile games with that same money. 100 mobile games with that same money. And one of those might hit even bigger than MGS5 did. So it's not about, like, one replacing the other in terms of, like, player bases. And, you know, it's not about expecting console players to go to mobile. It's about businesses looking at, like...
Mobile is just less risky.
Yeah.
The weird thing about mobile is, if you look at it, it's less risky and more risky at the same time. It's less risky, yes, the games are cheaper, but you're also finding quite literally millions of other games
Yeah.
where you're not on console. So it's more and less risky at the same time.
Totally. It's you know, it's every bit a slot machine as much as everything Konami does, you know, in the gambling sector, you know? Like, you never know what's gonna hit. And that's weird. And, you know, you have companies like Rovio doing Angry Birds and, you know, like, making huge amounts of money, but, like, are they still doing it? I mean, I'm sure Angry Birds still does great, but, like, where's the next one? Where's the next hit from them? I mean, they put out Angry Birds 2, but no one's talking about that. No one's like, oh, man, the sequel to Angry Birds is really blowing up.
Yeah, not that long ago, they also laid off quite a few people. They laid off, like, 200 people.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at some point, you start to wonder... You know, the rising R&D costs of new console platforms combined with, you know, the potential of, you know, reaching that mobile crowd. You know, I could see more developers doing what Konami is doing. I could see more publishers, especially in Japan, where the consoles aren't actually selling that well.
That's the thing. The console market is 100% dead in Japan. But that's also a function of their aging demographic.
Definitely.
Japan has a demographics issue.
Yeah. They're aging, you know, their aging population and all that other stuff. Like, it's just, you know, those players, I think, are migrating to mobile. And, you know, that's going to make it hard for a company like Sony or something like that. If the PS4, you know, it's why they cut the price. You know, if the PS4 isn't hitting it out of the park in Japan, then, you know, the home turf, the mothership at some point is maybe a little less interested in investing heavily in a PlayStation 5 if it's suddenly something that only they can sell in US and Europe.
But that being said, unlike Nintendo, Sony does a far better job of siloing their stuff, and if Sony Japan doesn't, there's a good chance Sony Europe or US just picks up where they left off.
Yeah, that's definitely... I mean, I think that's probably where it should go at this point, because if you look at Sony First Party and, like, a lot of those shots getting called out of Japan, like, Sony First Party is a car crash, man. There's, like most of those, you know, the games are taking too long to come out. You know, they haven't hit hard. Like, a lot of the stuff that's even coming out of the U.S. just, you know, has been a little limp so far. It's crazy that they're in the lead over Microsoft, because Microsoft has, like, kind of more tried-and-true games already out on their platform. Like, you know, whether you like them or not, like, they've put out, you know, three-fourths of games. They're putting out Halo. They put out, you know, like, they've got the big names on the Xbox. But because...
That was entirely Microsoft PR blunder.
Yeah, Microsoft...
They're not doing...
Yeah. Totally. Microsoft handed it to Sony. Yeah, Microsoft handed it to Sony. It's like the craziest turn of events. And like Sony's like doing really well. Like the messaging, like all that stuff, like, you know, their people are out there. They come across as genuine humans, and you know, they're making the right moves. They're making the most of what they have. But at some point you start to wonder if that catches up with them as Microsoft really gets rolling with their first party stuff.
Honestly, if you look at what Microsoft is doing, it's more subtle. I don't know if it's innately obvious to a lot of people, but if you look at what they're doing with their game stuff, it's not just Xbox at this point. They're putting Xbox more into a service platform than just a hardware platform.
Yeah, I mean,
they seem to understand that the device that's hooked up to your TV is only one part of it, and things like PC need to be next.
Yeah, I mean, they're starting to treat the PC as, like, not as a full platform, because it's still, you know, hey, you can stream your Xbox to the PC, but they're hedging their bets. They're, like, they're making those inroads, so if next time around it doesn't make sense to put out a console, like, they've got the Xbox stamp on the PC. It's on Windows, you know, in a way that it wasn't before.
Yeah.
And that's probably pretty smart, I guess, but, you know, everything's still so up in the air. I mean, you know, we're 2 years into a cycle that, like, who knows how long it's actually going to last. And, you know, you can start to look at, like, the numbers right now and say, hey, you know, it's like in the U.S., the Xbox One is not that far behind PS4. Anything
it's
could happen.
Worldwide, they're being in. It's like 80-90% in Europe, though.
Right, yeah. Europe is huge, and obviously no one in Japan is buying an Xbox One.
Yeah, but to be fair, no one's buying a PS4 either.
Yeah, those
numbers
are huge.
It's doing better, but not that much.
Yeah.
But I think the sort of larger picture is also you're starting to see both Microsoft and Sony kind of loosen up a bit. Microsoft and Sony both allowing mods for Fallout 4.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Even 2 years ago, I could have never seen that happening. In fact, that's one of the reasons I tended to play PC over consoles. I like mods. I like to see what people can come up with.
Yeah, I think it's smart, and I think that speaks to, like, the architecture of those platforms being more similar to a PC. You know, that stuff probably can come over a lot more easily than it could before, especially on the PS3. I mean, you know, the cell processor, all that stuff, it'd be a nightmare trying to make that stuff work.
Yeah, it's a joke, but it's true. They're PCs in a box.
Yep. Yeah.
They're X86, and honestly, like, I see this generation being more traditional. I see it 5 or 6 years. I can't see 8 years again, given where those consoles are relative to the PC.
Yeah.
I can't see it going 8 years again.
I think you're right, but I think, you know, at some point the question then does become, like, is it worth it? Like, can they afford to go back into R&D all over again and do this? And how far do they go? Because these platforms are relatively weak compared to what you think about as a console launch compared to where the PC normally is when a console launches. Like, this is kind of the first time where it's been solved.
Here's an interesting thought, though. They're basically PCs in a box. They're x86 already. Like, I'm wondering if you run into a situation where the R&D cost to go from an Xbox One and PS4 to an Xbox whatever, PS5, isn't really all that much, because all you're doing is just literally using a better version of the chips you already use it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if they just keep it where they're at, then that doesn't become as difficult. You know, it's like they still have to have a good custom, like, you know, they have stuff to go to someone to make their graphics part and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, you know, that's
stuff exists.
Yeah,
but for the most part, they're using off-the-shelf stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at what they're using, it's not like in the past where it's custom-built. It's stuff AMD is selling to their people as well.
Right.
It's not unique hardware.
Yeah.
Just saying going from their current version to a better version, I mean, is literally just a chip swap, modifying the OS to allow for it.
Yeah, and that gets some backwards compatibility in a way that they, you know, in the way that they typically don't get now, you know, or at least it gets them most of the way there.
It does. It gets them 90% of the way there, and it's another it's another good example of, again, why, like, I can play 10-year-old games on PC, can't really do that anywhere else. If they can, if they stay at x86, it's not going to be that hard to take their games from one platform to the next, and then that no longer becomes a reason to stay on PC either.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, I like, third-party games are the dominant releases, you know, like, Sony's first-party is not really doing it that well, like, you know, Microsoft keeps, like, hinting at, you know, putting more of their stuff on the PC, Killer Instinct's going over, and, you know, they may go there.
Yeah, I'm probably going to stay on the PC for the foreseeable future, but, yeah, like, I definitely see them going that way, at least making it a long-term part of whatever plan they have.
Yeah, so at some point, you know, if you're a dedicated video game enthusiast and you're willing to spend money on video games, you know, you're not, like, too hamstrung by a budget, you know, a pumped-up PS5 that's just the PS4 with better stuff in it, like, if you're going to go buy that, you might as well just go buy a PC.
I mean, I've done the math. Like, I've looked at the math and done the math for, like, I have a Steam library of over 100 games, and I've actually done the math of what I've spent, and it's like, I have over 100 games, most of them pretty good, quite, if not half of them, close to half of them being AAA games. I've spent maybe $300 to $400 on that entire library.
Yeah, yeah.
So even though PCs are more expensive, you kind of come out ahead if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, you definitely make it up on the back end, and you want to think that Microsoft and Sony will eventually, and you know, they've had their sales and that sort of stuff. You want to think that they'll eventually get like Steam and start to like have those dramatic price cuts, but they're just not doing it. At the rate that they kind of said they would, you know, they started making a lot of noise, like, hey, we're going to be able to be a lot more flexible on price, and, you know, Sony does its weekend flash sales, and Microsoft has its cuts here and there, and all that.
Honestly, that kind of ties to retailers, in that PC is completely digital at this point. They don't have to appease GameStop. They don't have to appease Walmart.
Right, yeah.
There's no physical retailer in play here that they have to play nice with.
Yeah, once they don't have to protect a retail relationship, a lot of things will change about the consoles, because then used games are done. You know, like, that stuff, you just close the book on that, and...
But, like, that's the thing, that entire argument on YouTube is, like, yeah, I understand the argument, and I'm not against these games, but I'm like, when I could buy what used to be $60 for $5 or $10 on sale, I don't really care that I can't buy used games on PC.
Yeah, totally. It hasn't been an issue, you know, and PC games have been serial numbered and all that other stuff since the 90s, you know. It's been, you know, used games have not typically been viable there, even before Steam, and it wasn't a dramatic issue. I mean, it's a lot better now than it was, for sure, but yeah, it totally...
I mean, but even then, if you actually look at it in sort of a bigger picture, like, the one thing PC has always had either mod support, user-generated content, or even dev support, so it's always been a case of I've always felt like I've gotten more value on a PC than a console. Even in, like, the PS2 and 360 and stuff, heyday.
Yeah, totally. I think the thing that changed is, you know, back in the PS2 and Xbox era, there were a lot more games that were not going to the PC, or if they were going to the PC, console to PC ports were so dire that you still wanted to play the console version of that game. And that's been a huge change. The standardization of the 360 controller and all that stuff, it's just the PC is a perfectly viable place to play console-style games now.
Yep, but that was also a time where PC had its own scene, too. Like, at that time, I legitimately had a reason to have a console because I owned a Xbox and PS2 at the time along with my PC. And I'm like, I had different games to play.
Yep, yeah. You know, you're not going to play an RTS on a console. I mean, you know, maybe you could, but, you know, that's probably not your first choice.
No, I actually think... And I guess one last parting note or one last discussion point. Like, there was a lot of talk about it, but I think 2K was actually smart to make XCOM 2 PC only.
I think it's an interesting it's a smart lead platform for that game, and apparently the 360 version of XCOM did not sell at all. So it's probably not worth their effort.
That's exactly what happened. If you look at the numbers, the PS3 and 360 version sold combined under a million. You look at the Steam numbers, on Steam alone, 2.5 million.
Right, yeah. So at some point, like, it's just, you know, it's probably not worth the effort to do that. But, you know, once they, you know, they said they weren't going to launch with GamePad support on PC, but they would put it in later. And that, to me, I think that they'll... That's something they'll eventually do.
Oh, no, like, they're I could see 6 months down the line, like, they'll bring it over. There's no reason not to at that point.
Yeah.
But by doing PC only first, it allows them to do things like mod support, design an interface. That was one of my biggest complaints about the XCOM enemy. And no, this interface was designed for console, and I was playing it on PC.
Right, yeah.
So it lets them design a PC-focused interface. It lets them do a lot of the stuff they couldn't do last time around.
Yeah, I think that's smart, too. I mean, I think I even, you know, I played the PC version of XCOM with a 360 controller because it was just, you know, like, I think they did a good job with that interface for what it was, but it was just like, at some point, you could tell that they, that was a big focus for them.
Honestly, again, like, I think it's one of those weird things, right? No strategy games have ever done well on consoles, so I'm actually surprised they even tried it to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was just at the time, it just made sense to put it everywhere, and, you know, that's the type of company 2K is, and you know, they don't do, well, you know, they have Civ and some of that other stuff, obviously, but, like, you know, they're, 2K is a big console publisher, and so that's where a lot of their business is.
They tried doing console Civ Rev.
Well, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't a bad
No, and people definitely loved Civ Rev, I mean, but, you know, like, that was them sitting down and saying, like, okay, let's actually... like, rebuild this whole thing for, like let's rebuild a console UI that is still works with this, and they did really well with it. But, you know, like, generic, like, standard Civ, or, like, Beyond Earth
wouldn't
and stuff like that,
work.
It would never work. It would never work. So they have to be willing to put in that work and justify that work with whatever sales they get.
Yep.
All right. Good
All
talking
right.
to you.
Speaking to you.
Yeah. Have a good night. All right, I'm not that far from home now. There is a bunch of traffic here, though. But let's make this the last call here. All right, not Florida. Hello, not Florida. You're on the air.
Yeah, I felt like switching things up a little bit for you.
Nice. How's it going? What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's doing good. I just have one question for you. You guys said that you wanted a new skate game to kind of fill the void that Tony Hawk clearly just made. Don't you think, like, the exact same thing would happen to the skate series if they didn't get the black box people on it?
I think that's totally possible, but, you know, when I say I want a new skate game, it's like I want it done right. Like, a lot of those black box people still work for EA.
Right.
You know, it's just they're just not on the same team anymore. You know, I think some of them made Garden Warfare and that sort of thing. So when I think it comes with the idea of, like, hey, I want a new skate game and it should be good. You know?
Absolutely.
And that's you know, easier said than done. But I think that the skate team did really well, but, like, they only had three games, and I feel like Skate's the sort of thing that I think other teams within EA could still do well enough. Because they would probably share a lot of the code from the old games. That's a very EA sort of thing to do. They'd try to get it up and running on Frostbite, because that's all their games have to be Frostbite now. And yeah, I don't know. It's definitely not, like, a guarantee that a new Skate game would be worth playing. But I would sure like someone to give it a shot.
You make it sound like a much more possible move when you put it that way. I guess they could be able to reform them pretty easily, or at least enough essential staff. That's one of my favorite series from that generation. So as soon as you said that, I got a little twinge that the exact same thing would happen. I would hate to see that.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be real bad. That'd be real bad. But, you know, even if the original crew didn't work on it, if some of them are at EA, conceivably you could see, like, hey, we're going to send the builds over to these guys from the skate team and let them at least give some round of feedback. Like, I know that happened with, oh, God, what was it? Oh, when NBA Jam was coming out, it was done by, like, EA Canada or something like that. But, like, Mark Turmel worked for EA at Tiburon at the time, working on Madden. And so, you know, he definitely saw builds of NBA Jam. I don't think he, like, he couldn't make sweeping changes to it, but he at least was able to go, hey, these are some things that you're missing from original Jam that you should really focus on, and at least, like, lend some feedback internally to those games that, that help them immensely, from my understanding. So, yeah, I think there's a path for a skate game to happen at EA, if they can make a good business case for that thing coming out, and they can find a studio or find a crew of people that can get it done. But, I, you know, it's not a done deal by any means either, so it's always going to be one of those possibility type things, like Mirror's Edge or something. Maybe it'll happen someday.
I'm holding out for it. Maybe not necessarily this generation or in the next few years, but you know, I'd like to see a second step.
Yeah.
Second one, man.
Yep, see ya. All right. That's going to be it. I'm going to turn off the call machine here. And, you know, thanks for everybody who called in. Yeah, you can go back to, you know, on Twitter I said EA should make a new skate, and then, like, a couple of guys from EA responded to it. You know, not in a way that they said, like, oh, we're definitely doing it or anything like that, but you know, it was definitely like a, man, we would love to do that. Oh, if I could, I'm trying to get it together. Oh, that'd be cool. But, you know. So, you know, there are definitely people at EA that I think would love to do that. I'm sure there are people at EA that would love to make another Burnout also. You know, that's the thing. Like, the people at EA would, I'm sure, are a lot like you and I. They're not all robots. you know, there's definitely things. I'm sure there's someone at EA right now that is going, man, one of these days I'm going to convince them to let me make a new Crusader. And the actual answer is no, they'll never convince anyone to greenlight a new Crusader. Which is sad, but true. But, you know, I'm sure there's someone there at least trying to keep the faith. And maybe it'll lead to a little bit of Crusader working its way into another game someday. I guess you don't have to be an EA to sit there and think, like, man, I would love to see another Crusader, and I'm going to put some Crusader elements into my next game. Which might not be the best idea in the world, because Crusader is a very old game control-wise. It doesn't make a lot of sense, that isometric action. might not translate super well. And yeah, we'll see if Alex Ward and whatever crew he has assembled at his new studio, if they really do go through with making a new Burnout, or a you know, spiritual successor to Burnout. I just have no impression of, like, how, what size that studio is, and what it would take for them to get something done, like, what scale they could operate at, and, you know, could they make an open-world Burnout Paradise-style game, or would they just make some tracks and some cars and some crash junctions? Could they make crash junctions without getting sued? They said not open world? Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sure it's a lot easier to just, like, kind of design tracks. I mean, that's a very PS2 era thing to do. You know, smaller team working on those older Burnout games. And those older Burnout games were fucking awesome. I wonder if they kickstart. I wonder if they put together something and try to kickstart, or if they just do a deal with the publisher to put it out. I feel like there's, like, this like, glut of arcade-style racing games that got kick-started or you know, indie-sized driving games that just never... that haven't come through yet. There's a stuff like a... was it, like, a Drift Stage? And, you know, this is the, what, 90s arcade racer that's supposed to come to the Wii U at some point. Which looks very... which has a very kind of Daytona look to it. And I wonder if those will be of interest to a wider audience, because, like, those, you know, track-based, time-based games, you know, games of that size went away in a lot of, you know, it's like, no, they're not making new Ridge Racers because, you know, the interest wasn't there anymore. And those games started to have a lot of tracks because they kept reusing all the old tracks. So when you're building something completely from scratch, you know, you're going to put out something that has like 5 tracks and 3 cars. And like, what do you sell that for? How long do people care enough about it to play it? Or you know, like a wider audience. You get your dedicated fan base that just loves that stuff to death. And obviously they'd stick with it and all that. I just wonder like how big the audience for that stuff really is. You know, I think Burnout's a different deal because that's... the Crash Junctions, it's like that concept, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that exactly, but that adds some replayability. I don't know, you got options, but that sounds like a hard problem, because those games all kind of went away for a reason, for a business reason, but maybe at a smaller scale there's a way to make that totally work. Anyway, I'm home, so there. Everybody have a good night, and, yeah, I don't know. See you in the morning.